Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
Orlando Franklin and Ford Tyler this afternoon. And hey, really quick, and we'll get to the Kareem Jackson stuff with Akib in a second. College football's thinking about expanding to 12 teams for the playoff. What do you think about that?
Love it. Love it. Love it.
How would that work, by the way? Would the top four seeds get a bye or something?
Yeah, something like that. But what's going to happen? What we have to realize and what we have to be accepting of, and I know that college football, they've already talked through this, is you're going to see a lot more people say, yeah, I played my 10 or 12 games this season. I'm signing with my agent. I'm going to my training facility to start working out and getting ready for the NFL draft.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see a lot more kids that are not playing in that last game, that last possible game, which bothers the heck out of me because you've been with these guys for 3 or 4 years. You've grinded with them. You know, football is risky every single time. It's not just risky playing in the game. It's risky practicing and getting ready for a game. But I just love football, D-Mac. So anytime I can watch more, and it's those one-and-done situations where you know you're going to get the team's best, love it. And you would have to back it up. That's another thing that I would love about it is essentially now you end up backing it up a couple weeks. So that would be great because we get just more football longer before it goes into the offseason.
Yeah, how would it work, Richard? You got some details on how that would work?
Yeah, so the proposal that's on the table calls for the bracket to include the 6 highest-ranked conference champions, and then the 6 remaining highest-ranked teams are at-large bids.
Oh, okay.
They're not slotted by conference.
So how do they do the playoff then?
So the top 4 seeds, the top 4 highest-ranked get a bye, and then seeds 5 through 12 play each other on home fields, kind of like a home field.
But then you would have... Oh, okay. Oh, wow. So, man, it would be hard if you're seeds 5 through 12 to win the whole thing, man. You'd have to go quite a distance.
Yeah, and there's some other quirky things in there, too. Like, colleges like Notre Dame that are ranked as independents could never qualify for a top 4 seed because they can't win a conference title.
Interesting. So
love it even more.
It would be more difficult.
Love it even more. See, sign me up.
Catholics, what are you guys?
Catholics versus convicts.
There you go.
I don't even know how they came up with that.
The other thing is that there no conference would automatically qualify for it. So there's not like a guaranteed has to have a representative from X amount of conferences. And there's also no limit on the number of teams from a particular conference.
Oh, so
you
interesting.
Could get 6 SEC teams if it shook out that way.
So could you possibly, God, I got to think about that. You could get 6 SEC teams and no Pac-12 teams?
Correct.
No. Oh, my God.
And it would be loaded up. Oh, SEC, ACC would be the top 2 divisions.
Yeah, I'm loaded up. So you don't get an automatic bid if you're the Pac-12 champion?
No automatic bids.
Oh, my God.
That's great.
That would be humiliating.
So how do you get a bid then if they are putting in 4 or 5, or say you get 4 teams from the SEC?
Like, yeah, I don't know, man. I always thought it would be good. Like with 8 teams and the Power 5 get, you know, you automatically get in and then you get 2 other teams and you take care of business. Listen, if the Pac-12 really is that bad that the champion doesn't merit one of the top 12 spots, all right, fine, I guess. You know, I just look out for my Pac-12, that's all. I know when it comes to football, man, Orlando, the Pac-12 is...
Is what? Garbage?
It's rough. It's not good.
Okay.
Hasn't
just making
good.
Sure that we're on the same wavelength right there.
I just love the Pac-12, but I get how they're looked at nationally. I mean, yeah. I understand it. It doesn't change the fact I still love the Pac-12 for football.
Yeah.
But well, I maybe just like a garbage conference, but, you know, either way, I like it.
Well, it is what it is.
It's a good idea. It should happen, and any way that the kids who aren't getting paid anything can make more millions for bowl organizers and fat cats is, of course, a good idea.
Yeah. It's just the competitive aspect of it, right, D-Mac? You look at some of these kids, and now if you've been in college or you're chasing a championship, you get an opportunity to play a couple more games. And it's even more special for those guys that don't have a career in it. And,
all right.
You know, you might get...
That's not why they're doing it, but that's cool collateral.
Strictly money.
Right.
You know, one texter was like, come on, oh, like, hey, what do you mean they're going to sit out? They would play because they're trying to chase a championship. No, we're seeing it now more and more.
Each
and every year, we're seeing more and more guys saying, the heck with that. I played this year. I had a good season. You know, it's time to go get with my agent and try to learn how to run a 40.
Change your rules, incentivize the playoffs, pay the kids for winning those games.
Love it.
How about that?
Yep.
There you go. It. Everybody going to make millions? Yep. How about you get in there? How about that for some incentive? Now you'll have guys interested if I can make $1 million.
Yeah.
Because this is garbage anyways, not paying kids at this level.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even say kids. Young men at this level is ridiculous.
Or just a bigger per diem. You know, sometimes you play in some of these college games and they're saying, here's a $1,500, see you in California in a couple days.
Yeah.
And you got to pay for your flight and you got to do all these different things. You can give them a bigger per diem and guys,
if you're playing in this game,
we're going to, you know, give you a nice thing.
How about everybody that wins, you get $50,000?
You're going to give
yes.
18-9, really?
Yeah. How many kids am I talking about here? Mm. You play in the game, you get a $50,000 bonus. Got to play in the game.
But they're going to need
some.
You're going to need some education on how to manage that $50,000, D-Mac. No, I don't know how. I would have never trust myself between the ages of 18 and 20. Here's 50 or 18 and 22. Here's 50 grand. Oh, you just won.
I can't trust my 19-year-old with $125 a week.
Exactly.
I'm like,
right?
What'd you spend that on? All right. Aqib Talib has a podcast. Kareem Jackson said this.
I honestly think y'all gonna have to shine soon.
Yeah, I got a great relationship with Deshaun. I've been talking to him the last couple weeks, man. And all he's been telling me is like, look, Jack, just tell him like, that's why I want to be. I'm like, man.
You see the setup, the line straight. He see the setup.
He like, man, listen, that's why I want to be in Denver. He's like, during the time while I was going through, you know, my little free agency thing and I end up signing back here. Before I signed, he called. He was like, man, are you going to sign? I was like, I don't know. I ain't sure yet. He was like, well, you know, let me know what you're going to do, whatever, whatever. And I signed back. He's like, listen, man, tell him that I want to be in Denver. So I'm like, hey, man.
Hey, y'all hear it, man? You know what Sean would be. Y'all hear it? Y'all hear it? We catching fades, baby.
All right. So the question to you, Orlando, when we come back, should we be trying to get Deshaun Watson here in Denver? That's next on The Drive.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
Orlando Franklin, nice enough to hang around for a little bit. And Mark Schlereth will join us coming up. Chad Brown a little bit later today. So the all-star cast and crew filling in for Tyler today. Okay, by the way, I got a text from my guy, Brent. Great young man. Goes to Notre Dame. I believe Brent, sophomore, maybe at Notre Dame. Why is Orlando hating on my Irish? So that's a young man right there, Orlando. That is a young guy who doesn't quite get why somebody who went to Miami is hating on Notre Dame.
Yeah. Well, no, in all actuality, D-Mac, I got nothing against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish or whatever they want to call themselves, or the little leprechauns or whatever. I do not have any beef. Obviously, I went to the University of Miami, so when you walk into University of Miami, there's a couple teams that you don't like. And Notre Dame fell on that list of teams that you don't like.
Well, I understand why, but it is interesting because Brent's a great young man. He's like 20 years old, maybe a little bit older, but he doesn't really, maybe that is diminished over the years.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, this is how I heard it. Well, Notre Dame wanted to come up with this Catholics versus convicts stuff. And the idea behind it, I guess, was a lot of University of Miami, they players were known because of their off-the-field extracurricular activities back in the day when these two clubs would meet up. And with Notre Dame, you know, yeah, the good GPAs and, you know, the clean-cut guys and the walking the straight line. So it's just a school that had a really good tradition that was known for keeping clean and winning football games versus a school that had a lot of off-the-field noise and a lot of guys kind of really doing their own thing. So for what I'm understanding, that's why the whole saying came up. And you know, large part of that is Miami kids and being down there in Coral Gables, a lot of those guys weren't doing the right thing. So it is what it is at the end of the day. Ryan Harris is one of my best friends.
There you go.
He went to Notre Dame.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And me and Ryan are really cool. You know,
okay.
Sam Young, one of my really good friends, too, went to Notre Dame. So you get all these different guys that go there, and the feud's over, but it always makes me chuckle.
Who would Miami rather be, Notre Dame or Florida State?
Who would we rather beat?
Yeah.
It's all about one game each and every year, Florida State.
That's it. Okay.
You got to go win against Florida State. What happens in the state, in that state, D-Mac, it's you get guys each and every year. It happens. You guys get recruited by Miami. You guys get recruited by Florida State.
Okay.
And for me, when I was leaving high school, I went to the University of Miami. I had a really good buddy, Preston Parker. He went to Florida State. And you look forward to those bragging rights coming home and telling people, hey, we kicked their butt this year. It's a state rivalry.
Would you want Deshaun? Two things here. First of all, I mean, should go in order. What do you think about Kareem putting it out there, which became a huge story nationally, by the way?
Yeah.
That there's a Broncos player who's advocating for Deshaun Watson to be on the Broncos. Let's just start with that.
Well, what did we expect? This has been going on all offseason, right? Love K-Jack to death. He's voiced his opinion. He's said that, hey, Deshaun wants to be there, that he's talked to Deshaun. And, you know, I trust Kareem Jackson in those situations because obviously he was a teammate of Deshaun Watson. I think that right now it's kind of like, hey, you don't touch it. It is what it is because you expressed that months ago when before free agency was going to open. We knew about that. And I understand your campaigning for him. But all the legal issues that Deshaun Watson has, plus on top of that, you have two quarterbacks in your building. You got to go about business on a day-to-day basis like that guy is not going to walk through the door. Not now, not anytime soon, not never. Right now, you got to focus on winning football games this year. So I think it's like the broken record where we're talking about something that probably won't happen.
Yeah, but you
probably shouldn't be talking about it at this time of year.
It's not disrespectful to Teddy Bridgewater.
Very, very disrespectful.
All right.
If I'm a teammate of K-Jack, and like I said, love K-Jack to death, but I'll just be like, hey, you know, it's kind of like, hey, we got to approach this situation right now like we're in season. We got blinders on. We got a quarterback competition going on. Let's forget about those other quarterbacks until one of them show up, if they show up.
Do you think Kareem – see, he's a vet, man. Like, it's not his first rodeo here. I was going to say, do you think he was naive in terms of what attention that would attract?
I think Kareem Jackson is looking at, hey, I want to win. I've never won a Super Bowl. Deshaun Watson probably gives me the best opportunity to win.
We have all this
young talent around us with these wide receivers, right? Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, first round picks, right? Then you go to Cortland Sutton, KJ Hamler, second round picks, right? You just drafted Javonte Williams, second round pick. Mm-hmm. You got all this talent on the offense, and on top of that, GB's in the GB zone. Garrett Bowles is playing lights out.
Of course he's in the GB zone. GB zone.
Yeah, right. So I think he looks at all of that, D-Mac, and on top of the fact that I think he looks at all of that saying, hey, this gives us the best opportunity to win, but I think he also looks at the fact that, hey, this team cut me. I was on the street for a little bit. We didn't win a ton of football games the last 2 years. Yeah. The heck with it, what I say and what I stir up, because most likely I'm not going to be here past this year.
His sense of loyalty,
I just want to win.
Yeah, because he's probably not going to be back here next year, right?
There's no way. They cut him.
Right.
Okay, so
it's a miracle he's here.
I know this to be a fact because, like I said, me and Kareem real different. When they cut Kareem, Kareem wanted them to. When they cut Kareem, Kareem wanted now to. Before they cut him, they wanted him to take a pay cut. Kareem said, "The heck with that, I'll take a pay cut, but hey, I want you guys to read me up. I want you guys to, you know, put some more years on my contract, do an extension."
Right.
They said, "No, we're not doing that." So ultimately, Kareem got cut, and then he was sitting out there looking at it from the outside in. It wasn't where he thought it would be, so decided to sign back to the Broncos. But with how they handled the situation, they weren't willing to extend the deal. And you look at the draft this year, they just went and drafted two safeties. They're trying to get cheaper in that room because of all the other money that you've spent at the quarterback position and paying Justin Simmons as well.
Appreciate you coming back here for another time.
Hey, I don't know, thanks for having me.
Maybe there's some other chores to do later on tonight. Who knows? But, man, really appreciate it. Prediction for tonight?
Avs win. I got the Avs going in the barn and putting it all together.
What's the score?
I'm going to say 4-2.
4-2 and hanging on. 4-2, you get an empty netter. It's 3-2.
No. 4-2 hanging on. No empty netter. I think Vegas will.
So they get a little bit of a lead.
Yeah, they get a little bit of a lead. They start implementing their game.
Okay.
They get back to playing Avs hockey. Go, Avs, go.
All right. Thank you, Orlando. Mark Schlereth joins us next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbus and T-Mac.
Mark Schlereth is hold on, I should do this. We got Mark Schlereth on here.
Bears be walking in the crib and everything.
Mark!
Yes!
What the hell?
Yeah.
What happens? You should have you told the bear story yet or
no? No. There was a bear not in our yard, in a neighbor's yard here in our neighborhood in Lone Tree. Just yesterday morning. It was yesterday morning. Little black bear.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happened? Well, everything all right?
Yeah, everything's fine. I mean, I think it just wandered off from its family or something. It was on a sojourn, you know. So it's crawling around on fences and everything else.
Taking a spirit walk or something?
Yeah, exactly. So I was thinking bears be walking up in the crib. Yeah, they were right in the crib, right in the neighborhood.
And just to clear some stuff up, poolside, your dad, who's 80, how old's your dad? 80?
He'll be 82 here in a little over a month. Not quite 2 months, a little less than 2 months.
82. Is that your house cleaning out?
Yeah.
He's visiting?
Dude, I picked him at the airport last night, hanging with my mother, and we pull in, grab the suitcases. I bring the suitcases in. I go out to get a couple more things, bring them in. He's already hauled up two suitcases upstairs, and he comes down in shorts and a sleeveless T-shirt to go outside and get some work done. I don't know what he was doing. Like, he is a perpetual motion machine. The guy never stops. He never stops moving.
That is awesome.
So, yeah, he is in phenomenal, just phenomenal shape. The guy's awesome. He's incredible.
Okay. We'll get to the football stuff in a second, but I want to talk kind of big picture in terms of let me start with the Nuggets and we'll get to the Avalanche. But when I start with the Nuggets, I think we should start with what Michael Malone had to say after the game. Let me give you a couple excerpts.
I saw one team that wanted to be here and play with a purpose and urgency, and one team that did not want to be here and play with no urgency, and that's why we got our ass kicked. We had a lot of guys play really bad tonight, and then we allowed the impact of not making a shot to affect the other end, and it was really, I mean, playoff basketball. Can you sit down and guard one-on-one? This was just an embarrassing performance all the way around from top to bottom. They've had their way with us on both ends of the court. I felt we quit tonight, which is something you never want to see. So I guess for game three, I'm just going to try to find guys that well, at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with five guys that fill that, but these two games, these second halves, have really been disappointing, and that's an understatement.
Does this work?
You know what? He's called them soft. He's like, one thing about them, they've developed, and I think they've built a really good culture. With that said, this is, I understand what you're doing. It's probably a little over the top. One of the things, and I was telling Mike this morning, one of the things I really respected about my time in Washington with Joe Gibbs is, even if we played that poorly, and we had some games where we did not play well, Joe would stand in front of the media after the game and take 100% of 100% of the kind of spears and arrows, if you will, for the way we played. He'd be, it's 100% my fault. I did not prepare my guys, my coaches. I didn't prepare my coaches, and my coaches did not prepare my players. And I guarantee you this, it will get rectified. And he meant it. And, you know, you appreciate that as a player. I've always felt like, you know, when you call out players, you know, you could say there's certain ways to do it where you can say, hey, we didn't have enough focus, we didn't have enough intensity, we didn't have enough whatever. But when you start saying, hey, we're soft and we quit, and you know, I think there's a fine line that you tread on with that stuff, and that just felt like a little over the top. It felt like you crossed that fine line out of frustration from, you know, what was an ass whooping. I mean, it was that was as bad a game mm-hmm. as we've seen. And, you know, the thing I think that's so frustrating is because how many times has Michael Malone propped up that team? How many times has he talked about the fact that, hey, we don't get any national respect. We don't get this. You know, people are counting out Nikola Jokic, and all of a sudden, right. you have the one night, D-Mac, where you have a nationally televised game. You're the only game in town.
Yep.
And I can't tell you how many of my friends that I know in the media, guys back east, guys that are NBA guys, were like, oh, you know, I mean, I haven't really seen anything from the Nuggets except highlights, and obviously I didn't miss anything. This is who the Nuggets are, you know, and it almost just adds and adds to the narrative of, you know, Nikola, did he really deserve the MVP? Was right. it just the, you know, the Nick Wright? He's the worst MVP in the last 35 years. And that's, I think that's what hurts, and that's what got frustrating. And I think Michael Malone let those frustrations, you know, spill over in the press conference.
But clearly he's doing that to institute a change in his players. I mean, he's not a dumb guy. He has a reason for what he's doing. But it does feel, I always laugh at the, or snicker at the team meeting, players only meeting.
Mm.
Like, how many players only meetings can you actually have? How many times can you call your team soft, or how many times can you pull that card? And if it just feels like to me, he's played that card already this year. And so I guess I just sit here when I hear it and I go, well, okay, start JaVale McGee, I guess, right? I mean, you're talking about I'll find five guys that can play. I mean, I don't know. There's other guys on the team. It just feels, it's kind of like, hey, I'll turn this car around sort of moment. It's like, no, you're not. And
right.
You know, at what moment do you just realize, well, we're just not as good as these dudes? Or does it work? Does it really work? I guess that's what I'm asking.
I think we've seen them last year. I think we've seen them in the bubble respond, you know, down 3-1, respond. We've seen them in the past respond. Obviously, from game one to game two, and game one, for the most part, for two and a half quarters, three quarters, they were the dominant team. Up until about, you know, what, 6 minutes left in the third quarter, they started with big runs in the first quarter, the second quarter, and the third quarter. And then, you know, and then the tide turned, and obviously Phoenix ran away with it in game one. But at least you said, hey, man, they were competitive. They were good. The last 4 or 5 quarters have just been awful, just awful. And, you know, I understand the frustration there. Yeah, I don't know that that's going to work. I mean, the bottom line is you're just overmatched. You're overmatched athletically.
Right.
You're overmatched, you know, from a basketball acumen standpoint. I mean, we're watching guys that are just trying to get back in it, raining down threes that are just clanking all over the place. At some point, you know, get in there and post up. At some point, when you get the opposing center into foul trouble early, at some point, just keep pounding it in the post and taking it to that guy. You know, I mean, you're either going to get easy points or you're going to get his third foul. Like, it's just stupid things that you look at and you go, guys, you got to be better.
So now, and that just might be the case, and we'll get back to that, but the Avalanche are in a different situation, I think. However, you've got the experience of what it takes to actually become a champion, and the Avs are facing that dilemma tonight. That's next here on The Drive.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
Here's McKinnon. He'll dance a shot. He scores! Nathan McKinnon.
Now McKinnon with room. Moves in and shoots. He scores! Winner has allowed 5. Here comes McKinnon. Makes it 6. Nathan McKinnon with a spectacular goal. His second of the night. It is down 6-1. Colorado.
I think. Here we go.
Yeah.
And I want to separate what the Nuggets are doing or not doing and the Avalanche, because as soon as Jamal Murray went out, come on, let's just keep it real. Everything else was kind of gravy in terms of success. And all right, fine. Even though we have the MVP, it still is this, okay, reality is kind of setting in. For the Avalanche, I think it's completely different. I think the Avalanche, rightfully so, had championship expectations. And I want to go with you and your time. We'll go back with the Broncos to that time that you lost to Jacksonville, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then we'll move forward. But you certainly had championship expectations on that team. You must have. You had to have had that. And you ended up in a situation at home where things went south, like, to the degree that I'm sure it was shocking to everybody, to the degree where I bet you think about that to this day and probably reminisce in a kind of a sad way about it, or sort of a angry, or I don't know. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but so maybe I'll just start there. When you look back at that Jacksonville loss, how much does that bug you, if at all, and what are your thoughts of it?
There's this kind of crazy juxtaposition with that loss, because one, it's the catalytic event that drove us to back-to-back championships. And I don't know that we win back-to-back championships without that loss.
Mm.
Because every time something wasn't going right, every time that, you know, we got a little lackadaisical in preparation, every time that something just didn't, that just wasn't, you know, that wasn't dialed in, somebody would bring up, hey, I don't ever want to feel like that again.
Mm.
You know what? I mean, it was a rallying cry for back-to-back championships. It's still one of those things. It's the most stinging loss that we've ever had. I think as a franchise, it's probably the most stinging loss we've ever had, because we're 13-3. We're the number one seed in the AFC. We were really a good football team. And certainly should have. I mean, that was as easy a path to playing a world championship as there is. Now, I don't know what would have happened against Green Bay, but, you know, because they got there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, come on now. I mean, The teams, Jacksonville, we should have waxed them the next year. Obviously, we did, but we should have waxed them in the playoffs. And then what was left for us? It would have been New England. Well, I'm pretty sure we already played them in the season or the year before and put a beat down on them as well. We matched up very well with them in those days.
Right.
So, like, there was no question in my mind, we're going to a world championship. And you know, I mean, I guess as long as you can learn from it and you make it a catalytic event and everybody, you know, is on the same page going, I don't ever want to feel like that again.
So who do you think? Well, you were very lucky, though, when you actually think about it, right? Because what are the guarantees? Now, you already had a ring in your pocket because of your time in Washington, which was great. But how many times do you think athletes get to this moment, they fall short and never get that chance again? I mean, at least you have to contemplate the possibilities of that. So I wonder about the Avalanche who are sitting in the locker room now or doing whatever they're doing. I wonder if it's dawning on them, Mark, man, this could be it for us or for me or who knows, or at least for this, definitely for this group, because no team's ever the same coming back ever. So I wonder how that sinks in and how you seize the championship moment rather than wilt from it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know. I'll go back to my time in Washington. We won a world championship 1991 season. Many feel like when you get all the history of the Super Bowls, many feel like that's the best team that's ever won a Super Bowl, that 91 Washington team. Top 10 offense, top 10 defense. You know, I mean, I think we're a top 10 offense, top 10 defense, and top 10 special teams. We were loaded. 19 games, gave up 9 total sacks in 19 games. I mean, it was, we went out and just whooped people. And so you thought coming off that game that we're going to win a couple more championships with this team the way we're built, put together. The next year we had a bunch of injuries. We went 10-6. We went to the playoffs. We got bounced in the playoffs, the 49ers. And the following year we were 3-13 or 4-12. I mean, that's how quickly it changes. So when you're going through it, D-Mac, I don't know that you're really thinking about you. You're just looking at how good you guys are. I don't know that you're really thinking about the reality of what happens when you don't capitalize. I think most of the time that's kind of hindsight, right? After you don't capitalize, you look at it, and then, you know, and then all of a sudden 2 years later, 3 years later, you're on a different team, and you're like, wow. That, you know, that as quickly as it materialized, as quickly as we got good, it went the exact opposite way. And so I don't know that while you're in it, you really think about it until, like, for us in Denver, when we had that devastating loss, it's all we talked about. So there was a reality check. But again, I think there's a level of maturity that we have, because, you know, I was an older guy. Zim was an older guy. Mm-hmm. Habib was an older guy. Elway was old. He was 36. You know, right? I mean, so we had this really old, mature team, and Shannon Sharp was old, you know, and you let it slip away, and you're like, oh shoot. Because I think we had enough guys that had been to the playoffs, that had been to a Super Bowl, that had been places and didn't capitalize on those things. There's only a couple of us in that organization that had. I think it was me and Romanowski, and obviously some coaches because they coached at San Francisco. But there was only a few guys that had that experience.
Who do you think it was on then? To whose shoulders did it really rest on? Because tonight I'm thinking, hey, man, Nathan MacKinnon, who was nominated for the Hart Trophy, which is the MVP of the NHL, as well as two other guys, but he's you know, one of the top players in the league. So naturally you would think if you're really the best player in the NHL and this is the most important game of the season, perhaps your career with championship aspirations, it rests on your shoulders. I mean, that would seem pretty obvious, but I guess I go back to you and your experience, like, whose shoulders was that responsibility resting on?
I think that, like, I don't think that there was any one guy. I think, you know.
You don't think it rested on the best player or the best players, you know, the stars of the team? It, you know, it wasn't up to Glenn Cadrez, right? I mean, right. It was on somebody else, right?
Well, here's the difference. So I think, and this just may be because of of that generation. And not to go, you know, boomer on you, but we grew up, we liked football because we grew up watching football and playing football, right? The generation that is playing right now grew up understanding football and liking football because of Madden. Not because they watched it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a different. And so, like, there are so many guys in the league, you know, I talk to and I have meetings with, and, you know, you sit down with them. They have no idea the history of the league. None that are playing today. Zero. They don't know it. We had such an incredible sense of the history of the league, and there was such a unifying kind of power of those teams because of what had happened to John every time he went to the Super Bowl. 0-3, and just absolutely that team. The team got waxed by Washington, got waxed by the Giants, got waxed by San Francisco. I mean, the San Francisco game, what was it? They made a Simpsons episode about it, right? It was 55-10.
Right.
And so, but we had a great understanding of the history of that, right? And so there was this collective feeling of, hey, man, like, we can't let one of the premier, one of the best quarterbacks, one of the best players, not just in Denver Bronco history, in league history, go out this way. So there was a little bit more of a team unity. I'm with you with Nathan McKinnon. I don't know that you've scored a point since that 7-1 blowout in game one. And you guys certainly, I mean, you certainly, you know, haven't shown me that you can win in Vegas. And, yeah, your best players have to lead the team. And they have to play their best, you know, they have to play at their best. And more importantly than even playing at your best, you have to be able to elevate other people's games. And you have to make everybody else better.
And that's the test, isn't it, tonight?
Yes.
You know, we're not, we sit here right now and we're just like, oh, well, I guess the Nuggets just really aren't as good as the Suns. And Michael Malone's comments, it's like, okay, I mean, I'm rolling my eyes a little bit. I get what you're trying to do, and you got to try to do something. So I'm not going to blame a guy for trying.
Right.
But, like, you could try as. I'm sure you've been on a team every now and then or been around or, you know, seen it. You can try as hard as you want.
Right.
If you're just not as good as the other guy. I was at a baseball clinic one time. And this is real young youth baseball, Mark. And this guy was like, well, listen, I can take any group of kids and I'll coach them this and coach them that and this, that, the other thing. And we'll start off slow, but we'll gain momentum. And every year we get to the championship game. I'm like, oh, wow, that's great. And then a guy in the stands goes, well, what happens to you when you get in the championship game? He goes, oh, we lose. They're better than us.
Right. Right.
So, you know, so to me, that's like, I love that story because to me it's like, well, you know, it's sometimes they're just better than you. It really doesn't matter, right?
So I'm playing in Washington, D-Mac, and we're playing a game. I think it's a Thanksgiving game in Dallas, right? And so I come out of locker room early, you know, pregame, because I have to short snap. It's my last year. It's 94, I think.
Yeah.
And it might have been 93. It doesn't matter. You know, I have to go out and short snap. And I'm out there, and I'm done with my short snapping, and I'm waiting for the rest of the offense to show up, right? Well, the Cowboys offense is already out there. And so I'm just kind of watching them warm up. And they're running plays, you know, it's just running plays against air or whatever. And I start to take inventory in my own mind. And I was like, okay, let me see. Wide receiver, Alvin Harper, Michael Irvin. And then I go, let me see. O-line, I go, Mark Tuane, Pro Bowl. I go, Nate Newton, Pro Bowler. Mark Stepnowski, Pro Bowler. Larry Allen, Pro Bowler. Eric Williams, Pro Bowler. Let me see. Tight end, Jay Novacek, Pro Bowler. Fullback, Moose Johnson, Pro Bowler. Tailback, Emmitt Smith, Pro Bowler. Quarterback, Traitman, Pro Bowler. And I go, we're going to get our ass kicked. I go, we don't have – I'm thinking in my mind, I go, We don't have one guy on our offense that could start for the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Literally. And they, I mean, they put it on us.
Oh, my
and what
God.
Are you going to do, right? He's just like, hey, yeah.
Right.
They're better than us.
Right. Love it, Jim. But what, yeah. What happens when they're not better than you definitively? And that's the situation.
Right.
The Avalanche could be in today.
Yeah, although I will tell you this, and this is always interesting to me. Like, there are teams, for whatever reason, that you may be, you know, theoretically, on paper, whatever you want to say, you're better than them. But no matter what, like, the matchup just isn't favorable. Their scheme, whatever their player, like, you talk to any offensive lineman in the league, there is a guy that gave you fits that had no business giving you fits, right? You just did not match up well. I'll give you, if you covered him, I'll give you, for instance, one of my, you know, it reminds me of the line from Step Brothers. I had two bugaboos about the bear traps and sex with old ladies. Like, those are my two bugaboos, right? Phil Hansen.
Love Phil.
Phil Hansen drove me nuts.
Really?
Oh, God. It was horrible. I mean, I never, ever felt like I hit him. Like, it was just, he was like gelatinous, you know?
That's great. Well,
and it's one of those things. So there's times when our style, our players, their style, their scheme, we just don't match up well. And that's about is when you know you're better, but you know you don't match up well, that is about as frustrating as it can be for a player. And trust me, that happens. And, you know, I mean, you look at the last – if you look at the last 14 periods the Avs have played, what have they won? Four of the last 14?
Something
three?
Like that. Yeah, that's probably fair.
So, sometimes you just look at it, you're like, you know, our style and what we do just does not match up well. And that's what scares me, D-Mac, about tonight's game.
Okay, well, we're here for it, and, you know, that's really awful about, you know, Phil. You'd think somebody from, like, North Dakota would take it easy on somebody from Alaska, but...
you would think, right?
You didn't get any help on that one.
Uh-uh.
It's KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver. Fine.
One team that wanted to be here and play with a purpose and urgency, and one team that did not want to be here and play with no urgency, and that's why we got our ass kicked.
What happened this week? Mark Schlereth in for Tyler. Chad Brown coming up in a little bit. The All-Star crew pinch hitting today. And Stink, what in the world happened here in Colorado for our teams? Last week seemed awesome.
Right?
I mean, what in the world is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you nailed it with the Nuggets. You know, as great as winning against Portland in six was, I think we all had an idea. We all believed that it was really going to be hard. I mean, you know, hey, man, Phoenix knocked out the Lakers when the Lakers didn't have their two superstars, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, what did you expect? I think we all said it when Murray went down with the ACL is, oh, there goes your championship window chances. And so, it's disappointing. And the way they played is disappointing. But when you look at it, come on, Campazzo's a man, he's been a great story, and he's been fun to watch.
Sure.
Right?
Fun story.
But he's a 30-year-old rookie from Argentina.
Right.
Right?
Or Argentinia, as Shaquille O'Neal would say.
Yeah, Argentinia.
Either way.
Yeah. And then, Austin Rivers was on his couch.
He was working for DoorDash about 2 months ago.
Yeah. So, I understand that we're overmatched and the backcourts have been overmatched, but we've been overmatched in this series at the wings and honestly, the level of defensive competition that they show, length and speed and just excitement to play that end of the court, we have not shown.
By the way, Stink, the Nuggets have the MVP. They have the home court. They have the experience of being down, as they were twice in big league ways last year.
Yeah.
We'll see tomorrow night, right? We'll see. Yeah. I mean, was it just, effort or this or that? Or are the Suns purely a better team than you? And we'll know on Friday night, and then we can kind of have the conversation from there. But if it turns out the Suns are just better, nobody's going to be surprised. Most of us are expecting it. We'd like to be surprised if maybe this is all a mirage and the Nuggets really are, hanging back. See, we did not see that with the Knights and the Avalanche. We saw the Knights, for whatever reason, maybe DeBoer is a genius for playing Robin instead of Fleury. I don't know. Maybe getting your tails kicked in game one was the master plan. But in game two, the Avs probably shouldn't even won that game. Well, that wasn't the case in game two with the Nuggets and the Suns. I mean, that wasn't the case at all. Right. So game one was an indicator of badder things to come in game two, whereas in the Knights and the Avalanche, even though the Avs were up 2-0, I mean, you'd have to be a fool not to see signs that the Knights were going to give this a serious run. Well, we haven't seen that out of the Nuggets, but guess what? We will all have that opportunity tomorrow night at Ball Arena. So let's see. I don't think we're holding out hope for it, but we'll have a chance to be tested. Meanwhile, you do have a do or die situation for the Avalanche tonight. What are you expecting?
I expect them. Here's the deal. Like, I watched the first two periods of game five, and I mean, the Avalanche completely, neutralized. They beat them to the puck. They were sharper. They were quicker. They were more aggressive. I thought they outhit them. Like all these things that they did. The biggest thing is they couldn't capitalize. They couldn't finish. They had shots. They had open shots that they couldn't put in the right places. And ultimately, through those first two periods, you should have probably had a 4-0 lead. You dominated on shots. I mean, you were a dominant team. And it's about capitalizing in those opportunistic moments in which they couldn't finish. They just didn't have, there were times, I think Jost was on the doorstep twice and couldn't jam it in the back of the net. In overtime, who was it? Was it Confer that had the wide open shot off the rebound and couldn't lift it up over the glove of Fleury? It just, like, you just couldn't capitalize. And the couple of turnovers that the Avs had where their defensemen are pinching in to add a little extra on the offensive side, puck gets turned over, gleans off a skate, and the next thing you know, you get that one-on-one opportunity, and they capitalized on every one-on-one opportunity they had. And that's, like, that to me is, that's a huge difference. But listen, they're going to have to play three periods like they played the first two periods of game five, and it's still going to be close.
Well, we're all looking forward to it. They dropped the puck around 7 o'clock, so again, game that we can watch. Thank goodness. This, after 8 o'clock start, forget that. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we have a you know, it was, you know, a week of Broncos practice. It's funny because some teams are doing their mini camps, which are a little bit more open, a lot more open than OTA stuff. The Broncos are still finishing up this final thing of OTAs. Their mini camp is actually next week. And they wrapped up this session. But it seems like the news with the Broncos sometimes happens outside of Denver, where the Aaron Rodgers thing goes on and on and on. Now you have Kareem Jackson advocating for Deshaun Watson, and you realize that the Broncos are really not that bad of a place to land for either Deshaun Watson or for Aaron Rodgers. For some perspective as to what was happening this week, to sum it up, our guy Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider, joins us now courtesy of ROX Heating and Air, ROX, ROX Heating and Air. Troy, what do you think the story was this week for the Broncos?
Well, it's always going to be quarterback until it's not. And, I mean, that's going to change maybe next week with mandatory OTAs and we can see more. But when we're out there for that short viewing, as you've been and Mark's been, and quarterbacks become the focus. So Teddy Bridgewater looking the way he did was news on Monday. Drew looking like he was pressing. Again, it's one day in June, but he looked a little robotic and like he was pressing to me. And Rodgers' situation, there appears no sign in that frosty relationship. It's very clear his issues with management, and absent of a change with management, I don't know how that gets resolved. So does he sit out a year and then they make him a free agent or they trade him? I don't know, but that situation is not repairing itself anytime soon. And with Deshaun Watson, that's the guy that made the most sense for the Broncos this offseason. They were going to be all in, is my understanding. But for now, that is a total non-starter because of his legal issues. And now he's not going to be deposed for trial until after the season. So my guess is he'll be put on the commissioner's restricted list unless the NFL does an investigation and clears him. But the idea of him coming to Denver, that for me, all of that is put way off to the side until there's clarity. And it, to me, the optics of that would be very difficult to bring him in. When you're promoting women within your staff, you could have a woman owner. You'd have to have an investigation to be very comfortable bringing him in based on what's, of course, allegations. But you'd have to be very comfortable with your own investigation, me personally, before I would bring him in.
The Aaron Rodgers thing seems pretty simple to me. Fire your GM and, right? Fire your GM and everybody's hunky-dory, right? Or trade the guy. But here's my question to you, Troy, is if you're going to wait – and you're not going to do anything, and Aaron Rodgers is going to be a year older, he'll be 38 next year, aren't you diminishing the potential value you could get for Aaron Rodgers? Doesn't it make more sense right now, if you're not going to fire your GM and you're not going to be able to repair the relationship, doesn't it make more sense to trade him sooner than to sit on him?
Yeah, it's a terrific question. To me, it mirrors the Nolan Arenado situation. I can't find Hall of Fame third baseman walking the street on Spear in Denver. I can find a guy to be my general manager. I go down the hall. I go on LinkedIn. It's very easy. I go on Indeed. There's a GM. I'm not finding a Hall of Fame third baseman. No, let's wait and get the worst trade possible out of spite, out of ignorance, out of incompetence, whatever. In a Green Bay situation, it's different because they've gone to the NFC Championship. That's a very good team, and you can argue the GM there has done a decent job. But if you're asking me, having lived John Elway to then after Elway, then Peyton Manning, and then after Manning, I'm firing the GM. I am. And saying, thanks for everything, Brian. I appreciate your time, man. Good luck at the next stop. That's what I would do.
All right, hold on. Let me ask you a question on that then. All right, sorry. I'll ask you a question. Finish your thought, and then I'll.
But Mark's question, because I've had this question with a bunch of other writers and people in the industry, because I agree with Mark. If you hold on to him, I think it does reduce his value because of his age. I've had the counter argument, which is fair, that if you hold on to him, it opens up a much wider market of teams that could acquire him and would have the resources to plan for it, get their cap right, and be in the market for a quarterback. So that's a fair argument. I just don't think if you hold on to him, it does increase the package in return. It certainly would increase the amount of teams interested because they could be more flexible and they would have draft picks to offer that really don't matter as much right now because the draft's gone.
Had the Rockies fired Jeff Breidich in January instead of whenever it was, April, May, whenever it was, would Nolan Arenado still be on the Rockies?
Had they fired him after that first meeting that went south prior to the 2020 season, I believe, yes, he would still be with the Rockies.
All right, hold on. Oh, I see you're...
Not now. Not it wouldn't have... If they fired him, tried to say, we'll fire him this past January, at that point, the relationship was so eroded that it was not fixable. Had he been fired, you know, the previous November when they had the meeting after the 19th season, that would have saved the relationship, and I believe Nolan would still be here.
Fine. So are you saying then, and you see where I'm going here, Mark, is it too late to fire Gutekunst, however you say his name, the GM there of the Packers? Have you already blown that opportunity? And it feels so strange to say that, because any general manager that gets his team to a championship game, it feels like, hey, man, you did your job as the GM. You set the team up. But what kind of team do you have without the MVP? So do you believe that that's... And, Mark, maybe I'll, you know, throw this to you, too. But let's start with Troy. Do you think it's just too late?
Well, that's fair, and I think it probably is for this reason, because Mark Murphy and the GM have been in lockstep. So is how deep does his, you know, bitterness run? Is it just GM? Is it GM president? They're not firing the president. So that's where that web and that tangled yarn, I don't know if they can untangle it. I'm sure it would help tremendously if he wasn't involved, because everyone just keeps telling me, well, just give him money and that'll solve it. They've met six times over 5 months. And they've made no progress. It's clearly not just about money. Money could appease it, but for me, it would be make him the highest paid player, trade Jordan Love, and then like fire or demote the GM. I just don't see all those things happening, especially now where the calendar is.
Stay. Yeah, I just feel like you've gone down this road. You dug your heels in the sand, and that's the problem. And here's the deal, like with players, you don't have to include the players in your decision-making process, right? You don't have to. But if you tell the players you're going to, and then you don't, and then you go back on your word, or you come out to the local media and tell them, hey, Aaron Rodgers was on board with Jordan Love, and Aaron Rodgers comes back and goes, nobody ever one time approached me about Jordan Love. We got a problem. And that's the problem really is not that they drafted Jordan Love. The problem is they lied on him.
Mm.
And that's the issue. And it goes back. There's a few more things that have gone on, but you know, that was the final kind of straw that broke the camel's back. And I just don't see reparations happening here.
All right. Troy, thank you. Prediction for tonight, Avalanche.
Yeah, listen, I thought my prediction was going to be on the other night, but I had 4-3.
You were close, man. You were right. Yeah, you were right there. You were right there.
Yeah. And like a lot of my predictions, I was wrong ultimately. I have them losing tonight. Again, it's a great story if they somehow find a way, but man, I'm not going to lie. It's going to be a gut punch if they're out in the second round again. Like, they're too good to be going out now, and I don't care how good Vegas is. I really don't want to hear that. I don't, because you had home ice. If you lose this series, it's still, for me, it's remarkably disappointing given the season and the talent on this team.
Appreciate it, Troy. Troy Rank, courtesy of Rocks Heating and Air. That's ROX, Rocks Heating and Air. Yeah, Stink. Troy had his prediction was the Avs win 3-2 in overtime. And, but it was close. He had the right score and just went the wrong way. What do you think about Kareem Jackson on with Tlaib's podcast advocating for Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, no, I mean, they're friends, obviously, and Deshaun Watson's a phenomenal young player. There's no question, but he's got 22 lawsuits against him right now. And, you know, here's the other issue, too. You know, with this organization in flux, with the family feuding over, you know, which side of the family gets to take over ownership, the potential of this organization being sold to somebody else outside of the family. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of things going on there. And ultimately, how the NFL works when it comes to, you know, when it comes to legal issues. Let's say Deshaun Watson writes 22 checks, right? $22 million and says, let's make all this go away, okay?
Right.
And it happens. That's when the NFL will start its investigation. And if the Antonio Brown thing is any indication, like, teams wanted to sign Antonio Brown, but they didn't simply because the NFL went into their investigative mode and said, we'll let you know what the fine is once we've gone through our investigation. They're not doing anything right now, D-Mac.
Right.
So they're letting the legal course play out before they do anything. Ultimately, he's going to be suspended. There is going to be some type of suspension unless he's, you know, it's either going to go to trial and that's going to be next year sometime. And if he's completely acquitted, then maybe there's nothing to see here. We move on. But if he settles, they're going to do their investigation. There's going to be, not that you're admitting guilt, but there's an admission of guilt there if you're settling. And he's going to be suspended. 8 games, 6 games, 12 games, I don't know.
Hey, let me take it on a different angle then, because I think Deshaun Watson is radioactive right now. And
I do too.
Doesn't even make sense. That being said, this story with Kareem chopping up with Aqib. By the way, Aqib Tlaib, great job with your podcast. Way to go, dude. Kareem Jackson has to walk in the Broncos locker room next week for minicamp. And he's going to see Teddy Bridgewater, and he's going to see Drew Lock and the rest of his teammates. I mean, is it awkward? Not awkward? Big deal? Not a big deal? I mean, at what point do you as a player with the teammate just be like, hey, man, maybe I really should shut it down? Talking about any guy outside of the guys that I have at this point of the year.
Yeah, probably. It's probably one of those things you get caught up and you're just talking. And then you
whoops.
Then yeah, all of a sudden you realize, oh, wait, this is going out on air and everybody's going to hear it. Yeah, I mean, you understand. Like, hey.
No big deal? Not a big deal?
It's not. I don't think it's a huge deal. I really don't. I think you understand kind of the hierarchy of where you are as a player if you're Drew Lock or if you're, you know, Teddy Bridgewater. If Deshaun Watson walks through the door and he's completely acquitted and everything is good, you're not playing. So you get that. Same thing goes for Aaron Rodgers, right? So you understand that aspect of it.
What percentage of the Broncos players do you really think have Drew Lock's back? That really, honest to goodness, believe in him?
Oh, I would say I would see. There's a difference between hoping and believing.
Correct.
Right. And I would say that everybody's got his back from a hope standpoint. You want him to succeed. You want to see guys play well. You want all that. You want good things for your teammates and all that. So I think there's you know, a large percentage of those guys that are really hoping for the best. I think it's a very small percentage of guys who really feel like he's ready to lead this team.
Yeah.
That would be my gut. And hey, man, I've played in those situations. Hell, I played with Rich Gannon was an NFL MVP. When I played with him in Washington, he wasn't good. I mean, he'd come on the program and tell you, hey, man, I gave us no chance to win, right? Like he would tell you. And it took him a while, and he became an NFL MVP, and he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But there was a long process for him, longer than most. And you know, hey, Garrett Bowles, the turnaround he made last year after 3 years of just abysmal play is incredible. So it can happen. It can happen. It's just, you know, the examples are just so far and few between, D-Mac.
What's poolside fixing right now, or repairing, or just making just a little bit better for the world? Right,
well, now, I mean, he has restrained out the garage. He spray washed all the decks, all the pool decks at the house. Right now, we are about to go to dinner. I would have stayed with you for the rest of the show, but we're doing a little birthday dinner for my niece.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so we're going to go. I'm just going to go eat Mounds of meat from
there you go,
Fogo de Chao.
There you go. Oh.
Just, it's all
keep it green. Keep it green, not red.
It's all gonna be meat. It's it's gonna be great. Maybe Campazzo is there carving up. He's from that's Brazil, right?
You know,
is Brazil and Argentina the same place? I think they're close to the same place.
They're
right next to each other. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
All right.
Listen to you and Mike tomorrow morning. And do not forget, on Thursday the 24th, Michelob Ultra presents the Fans Match Challenge, powered by the CoBank Colorado Open and benefiting the First Tee Green Valley Ranch. Stink and Mike, Orlando, Sandy, Stokely and Zach, myself and Tyler raising funds for the First Tee at Green Valley Ranch. This is awesome. You can donate now at DenverFan.com/match. Our guy, Chad Brown, joins us next.